You're listening to Cadence, a podcast for creatives. I'm Hafsa.
And I'm Yen.
And if you're new to the podcast, Cadence is a conversation around topics that we wish we'd been more informed on when we started out in our career paths. The hope is to arm you, the listener, with some takes and tips that might be of service as you venture out on your own unique path and just to have a great conversation, which is what we're here for on this rainy Friday, which is a little bit pesky. And I made the mistake of riding it on my motorcycle. I didn't tell you that.
I text you and I thought, is Hafsa on her bike already? And then I thought, oh yeah, she's probably in this rain right now.
I came prepared though. I have my waterproof pants and everything.
So oh, I did not even notice that. I'll have to look at your legs when we
They're
walk
on
out.
Later.
We really want to thank Fifth Avenue Studios at Ann Arbor District Library for providing this amazing space and continuing to collaborate and produce this podcast.
It's a wonderful place to come to out of the rain. We appreciate them so much. And today we are here with Jason Stevens. This is going to be an exciting episode. Yen, do you want to give a little bit of like a preamble to help hype up our guest?
Oh, I'm going to have to read this very impressive bio because I can't remember all of the things that you've accomplished. Jason Stevens is the founding principal of Flutter and Wow Museum Projects. It's a design and build firm based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And he has been central to the creation of hundreds of exhibits and events since the early 90s. He's an enthusiastic scholar, an avid maker, and ultimately, he's an artist committed to helping making our world a better place through creative experience design. And if you're wondering what Flutter and Wow entails, this is the implementation of exhibits for museums, commercial venues, private collectors, interactive technologies, experiential design, which I love, graphic design, consulting, experiments, research, and planning.
Everything.
And some of his clients include the Science Gallery Detroit and Science Gallery Atlanta, Detroit Institute of Arts, the Rochester Hills Museum at Van Hoosen Farm, Great Lakes Children's Museum, Motown Museum, University of Michigan Museum of Natural History, San Antonio. We could go on and on and on. Jason has taught exhibit design at the University of Michigan Museum Studies Program, in addition to exhibit and environmental design at Lawrence Technological University College of Architecture and Design. He is published. He's an award-winning author in journals, websites, and the recent edition of Beverly Serrell's seminal book, Exhibit Labels.
That's right.
He is a former board member of the Washtenaw County Historical Society and a former board member of the National Association for Museum Exhibitions. He attended Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was
happy to be here.
Oh, goodness.
Just a few things on your resume. So,
I mean, I don't think of it that way. It's kind of amazing to hear that. It makes me a little giddy. And excited to get to work today.
Yeah,
me too. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I mean, it is so fascinating to have somebody in the studio that has had the breadth and the depth of experience that you have in this really unique area that you're in.
You know, I think it happens with age, I'm going to say.
Sure.
I mean, there was a time where the list wasn't that long, but I keep doing stuff, so the list keeps getting longer.
Good.
Love that.
So talk to me again in a couple of years.
Yeah, we'll just keep adding to the bio.
Absolutely. We'll just check in with Jason. Well, do we kind of want to, I mean, there's so much to talk about, I think, with, you know, your career and obviously the breadth of, you know, work that you've done and your skill sets, the people that you've worked with, the institutions that you've been, you know, been able to work with. Let's get into it. I mean, how did you get here? Tell us a little bit about your backstory.
Oh, I'm not going to lie. It's been a long and winding road. The story can be stitched together to make it seem kind of comprehensive. And I think that's something a lot of us end up doing at some point. I would never advocate anyone follow the same road that I followed. But I often start the story with when I went to college, I actually started in the art school and my parents got that first report card and they said, oh, no, can change majors so you can move back home. And so I spent much of my time as an undergrad bouncing around between majors, spent a little time in philosophy. Philosophy seemed like a lot of old dead white guys. Religion was way more colorful and interesting. So I studied religion for a little while. I ended up with a writing degree, which for some reason my parents saw as a practical art form, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's not wrong, actually. The writing serves me every day in many ways. I'm doing work for museums, so any listener already might imagine, yes, we write a lot of museum labels, and there's an art to that. So it's a good degree to get to become a kind of polymath.
Yeah.
I got out of college and immediately went to work for an artist. It's like, I'm going to art, mom and dad, whether you like it or not. Yeah. And as it so happened, Blake Ketchum, whom I've lost track of, if anyone knows Blake Ketchum, I'd love to reconnect with her. She was an amazing sculptor, a really interesting model because she was a working artist in Kalamazoo at the Park Trade Center. She had a little studio, her dog in the studio every day. Oh. She was, you know, setting her own schedule and taking her own work. The first job we started working on together was making models of Michigan prairie flowers at 10 times their actual size for the Kalamazoo Nature Center. I think those are still at the Kalamazoo Nature Center.
Let's go, Hafsa.
So, road trip.
It's a cool place. It's a really cool place. I always think about the bald eagle. They've got a bald eagle in a courtyard. They used to, anyway, in a courtyard there. It was maybe the first time I ever saw a bald eagle. Anyhow, I'm working for Blake. So that was kind of museum work right out of the get-go.
Yeah.
And I actually worked, I counted once because my daughter's always like, Dad, is there any job you haven't worked? I worked 20 different jobs between the ages of 18 and 28.
That's okay. Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of amazing.
It's a breadth.
I mean, that includes one night delivering pizzas. I figured out really quick that delivering pizzas wasn't for me.
You got to try a few things.
That counts. That counts. You got a paycheck.
But also multiple years doing historical restoration with a contractor, Lou Conti, another fellow I've lost track of. We were doing historic homes at there's a historic park outside of Kalamazoo called Celery Flats, where we actually moved some historic buildings and refurbished them. So again, I can weave that into the story of how I end up doing museum exhibits now. So a lot of that kind of work, I really became a designer out of an interest in design and a willingness to try making anything. In many ways, my path was identifying some other craft that I wanted to dabble in and finding some position someplace in a studio or whatever where I could exercise that. And, you know, just the grace that I was able to pursue that chaotic path and end up where I am is, I don't know how it works out, but it did. I ended up back here, you know, I kind of moved around the country, ended up back here in Michigan, here in Ann Arbor. Actually, a friend I was visiting said, have you been to the Hands-On Museum? You should be an artist, or you should go work at the Hands-On Museum. So I walked into the Hands-On Museum. The executive director's office door was open.
Stop. Amazing.
I knocked on the door, said, hi, can I get a job? And Cynthia Yao, she's an amazing person. She, for whatever reason, said, sure, we'll let you help make some exhibits.
What also, can you give us some context? What era is this?
1998.
So email is not prevalent yet. We're not like handing off digital CVs yet. We're not applying online. The door was open, so you took the chance.
Yeah. You know, I think of myself as people who know me would probably shake their head, but I think of myself as a shy person. I'm not the first person to go running up and shake someone's hand or what have you. But, you know, we all, I really try and stay away from a lot of binaries. Introvert, extrovert is one of them. Sure, we all have a little bit of this.
Yeah, that's true.
I love my alone time. I also love being with people. I can't figure out which one I am. But definitely when that moment comes, you know, I want a job here.
Yeah.
What do I have to lose?
The opportunity.
Exactly.
Yes.
Activation.
She
extrovert.
Could say no.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to look for the next thing.
So how long were you at Hands-On Museum?
I think that was 7 years. So I went from bouncing around jobs to finding something that really...
A knock on the door led to 7 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that job, we had, I think, 12 people on staff, mm-hmm. more or less during that time period. It definitely, the museum grew while I was there. But that meant that I got to know everybody who worked there. I got to see how all phases of the operation worked. Mm-hmm. You know, I even, you know, I hung out with the fundraiser. So I learned that part. And that's like the furthest away from the kind of stuff I do. But getting a knowledge of that stuff formed a really important background.
Yeah.
And they allowed me to be a designer and a builder and come up with wacky ideas of how to teach kids wow. scientific principles. So that was a joy. I loved working there.
Yeah.
My wife, Leslie Raymond, got a job in Texas, and I decided that it was time for me to move on. I come from a long line of entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. self-employed people, so... I don't want to say it's genetics, but whatever, I'm predisposed to it. So the idea of setting off on my own, you know, that's actually an interesting question, because I don't know what happened to me that I decided that was a good idea. It's not like I woke up one morning and was like, I could do this. It almost feels like I almost had no other choice. Mm. Like this is what I'm going to do now.
Is that what you saw modeled when you were growing up?
I guess so. Well, my dad was running Stevens Design Service Company.
Okay. Yeah.
My mom was running her own preschool.
Yeah.
So
you see the baseline of it sort of established, and it feels a little bit more natural.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. It's not like they were talking about running their own business all the time, but that's the environment mm-hmm. one comes up in.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandfather had started the business that my father ran. So he, you know, definitely exposed to that kind of stuff. I run a business now, and there are 9 of us, soon to be 10.
Nice.
I'm hardly the most effective leader. This is actually one of the things I'm dealing with a lot now is being in charge of a company
mm-hmm.
where 9 other people are depending. I'm putting air quotes up, everyone, depending on you for their livelihoods. Mm-hmm. I mean, to a certain extent, they are also. Anybody who works for me knows better than to think I stand between them and their livelihoods. But it does call upon me constantly to be more than Jason. I every day have moments where I have to get outside of who I am and try and be a better version of myself mm-hmm. in order to keep things moving.
Being, you know, a leader, you manage a very diverse kind of set of roles at your current, you know, job. Did you go to school to be a manager? Like, what your path is very non-traditional, and that the fact that you're in a place of leadership now, is that where you expected to be? And would you say, how did you train? You're smiling.
Shh, don't tell anyone. I didn't train at all.
Oh my God.
I'm the oldest sibling of 4. I directed a lot of musicals and performances involving my siblings as a little kid. So I've got a little bit of that baked into me. No, I don't think I have beyond that, which maybe is a huge amount of preparation. I don't know. That's my preparation.
Yeah.
Now it's more a need to get the projects done. Somebody's got to, you know, say, you know, come in and make this decision. And
got to orchestrate.
Got to, yeah. So.
Yeah, I asked the question because I know, especially for, you know, people early in their careers, they might not necessarily know, like, how do you get from point A to point B to being, you know, a leader over a number of people or a leader in an organization? And, you know, how do you, you know, where does that mental model come from, and how do you fit? And I think, honestly, a lot of the leaders that I've spoken to, they don't necessarily, you know, very similar. They didn't have training, so to speak. Their life has kind of been training, you know. Mm-hmm. They've just been in these positions where they end up working and collaborating with, you know, a diverse subset of people, and they just kind of, they learn by doing. So it's like, in a lot of ways, you don't have to set out to lead. You just kind of, you fall into it and you do it well, hopefully.
There are a lot of models. I identified flaws in a lot of people that I worked for. I don't want any of them, if they're listening, to take offense to that. I mean, I have as many flaws as anyone, but there's a little bit of that. a little bit of just being called upon to do it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think.
Can you talk a little bit about what your day-to-day does look like? Like what percentage of it is you overseeing the design or, like you said, managing tasks or people or deadlines?
Every day is definitely different, and that is by design. Oh, that's one of the reasons I run my own company, actually, is yes. because I'm a little bit obsessive about not repeating. In fact, the people I work with mm-hmm. Would roll their eyes because that's a little bit of a problem in that we never do the same thing twice. Everything's got to, if a museum,
bad.
Museum calls us up to create an exhibit and we're like, oh, we've done that before. Everyone's looking at Jason knowing he's thinking, how could we do it differently this
sure.
time?
Nice. How do we innovate?
I'm not really good sitting in front of a computer all day. I have to do a lot of that, but I'm a kind of antsy person. So but I also have been working with computers since I was a little kid in the 70s, programming video games and stuff. So I get, you know, I enjoy it when it's really task driven and yeah. working creatively. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of work in workshops, but I, at some point identified that I'm not a classic woodworker. Mm-hmm. I don't sink into the frame of mind that's necessary to do really good craft work. Mm-hmm. So I'm super competent in the workshop, but I'm not the best person to build things. So that's another reason I think I am where I am, is I'm not really super good at anything, but I've dabbled in all these
things. Generalist.
So I can talk to the folks in the workshop language. Uh-huh. I can talk to the designers, right. designer language. I can talk to the administration folks, mm-hmm. somewhat administrative language. I'm often a burr in their saddles, but...
So now that you've overseen this for, you opened in 2011, how has the operation grown? Like, mm-hmm. how do you continue to challenge yourself? You bring on more people into your stable of creatives. Like, what is the next step? What is the next challenge?
Oh, so I'm going to answer that question a little obliquely because you're reminding me about something else when Hafsa asked the question about leadership. It's been a mind-expanding experience being a leader because, again, as a kid, I spent a lot of time in my bedroom drawing pictures, mm-hmm. writing books. I wrote books yes. as a kid, playing on computers. Yes, I directed my siblings in musicals, but... but never saw myself as a kind of coach person. I never did team sports. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what being a coach is like. I'm losing my train
That's
of thought.
That's okay. I feel fine. Like maybe no. this has turned into a session of therapy and then Hafsa and I can go next.
Yeah. I'm ready.
Okay. But what I've discovered in my role as a leader of this company is one of the greatest gratifications that I get out of my work is my team. Mm-hmm. I mean, for one thing, mm-hmm. I get to assemble my team mm-hmm. and I pick people who seem interesting and disciplined and motivated mm-hmm. and curious about the world. And then we all get to team up together and work together. And this has been a huge surprise to me on jobs where I'm like, I can't believe how it gets me out of bed in the morning. Oh, I get to go wow. work with people. And if you told me that I would be having these thoughts, yeah. you know, went back to 20-year-old Jason and said this would happen, he'd be like, no, there's no way. You're from a false future. Go back. But it's true. It's really thrilling to work with really good people uh-huh. and see them being fulfilled by the work. Yes. It's just, like I say, it makes me want to mm-hmm. do it some more.
So. Yeah. Helps to stoke the passion, right? When you
Absolutely.
See other people learning and growing and becoming that ideal version of themselves.
Oh, yes. Oh, I love that. I hope that's how my coworkers feel about it too.
Well, I love that your voice sped up as you were talking yeah. about them too. I could tell that you were really proud of them, mm-hmm. right?
Oh,
like
for
as a
sure.
group of people. kind of like you built your fantasy coaching team that you never got to before.
Yeah. Like, this is sports. The sports team. Yeah, this is it.
I more often use the metaphor of rock and roll. That was a part I left out of the biography. Spent a lot of time playing in punk bands back in the 90s. Actually, one of my coworkers was like, we're not a band, though, just recently, because I'm always like, well, listen, if I'm the drummer, then you're the bass player. We got to let the singer stand out a little bit. You know.
There's a lot. What do you mean?
Right. The metaphor of coaching a sports team comes up a lot in these kinds of scenarios. But playing in a rock band also involves a lot of, you know, you got to even out the egos. You all have to work together to make the music. Everyone gets a solo, but, you know, the solo doesn't last forever. You got to let someone else have one.
I like that. It's a really good metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could see it.
Oh, and there's, I mean, I could go on and on. There's getting into the groove even. Like at some point, we're just, we're actually just jamming here.
That's right.
Like we're,
you're all
we don't have to think about anything. We're just doing it. Yeah.
That's better than the sports analogy, in my opinion.
Oh, it really, really is. Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, when you're in the groove and you're in the moment, what kinds of tools are you? What does your space look like? Can you describe that? Is it a studio? Is it a workshop? Is it a warehouse? Is it a everything?
Yeah, it is all those things. We have offices in the front and the workshop in the back. It's right now, it's a really nice space. It holds all of us well. We all have our little corners we can retreat to when we need to do so. So we have a workshop where we're making things out of wood and metal and occasionally other materials. Mm-hmm. And then in the offices, it's a lot of computers and software. Okay. We do a lot of electronic stuff. If you've been to a museum lately, you know that exhibits will sometimes be computer-based or some kind of electromechanical system. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our time is spent trying to work out electromechanical systems where, you know, you turn the crank and it lights this thing up over here.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay.
So, everything from table saw to SketchUp on the computer to soldering irons.
It's really a mix, it sounds like, of all of the different mediums that you could think of.
I'm thinking a 3D printer is coming soon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
There are certain applications beyond the hype of 3D printing that really suits us well.
Anything with lasers?
We laser. You know, shout out to MakerWorks, actually. My whole business model has been based on the ability to go over to MakerWorks and use their laser cutter and their CNC router. Their CNC plasma cutting machine is so amazing. You put a sheet of metal down, punch go, and 5 seconds later you have this cut piece of metal.
Very cool.
Wow.
Machinery we couldn't really afford. We wouldn't be employing it enough to afford it. But having MakerWorks, we're right near MakerWorks too. We can walk there from our studio. So it's a really useful part of our model, our business model.
Yeah. Is Flutter and Wow typical in the museum industry? Like, do most people do in-house? Do they outsource to you? Is your firm like the size in which is most, I don't know what the right word is, efficient?
Right.
Like, is this the size in which museums go to an outfit like yours and say, do the work that we can't do?
That's a really good question. I don't know that there's ever an optimal size. Years ago, I did a kind of thought experiment with spreadsheets, one of my favorite tools, actually, our collaborative spreadsheets. You had a previous guest who went on about spreadsheets.
Oh, yes,
and I was like, rah, rah. I've told students of all the innovations in my lifetime, the collaborative spreadsheet has changed things like nothing else has. Everyone being able to get on there and make it, it's just...
Game changer.
It really is. And the whole reason it's something to say out loud is because it sounds so friggin' mundane.
Sure.
And of all these tools, like we're just talking about laser cutters, but you're going to say collaborative spreadsheets are the most
important. Hashtag
sexy spreadsheets. Yeah, let's go. So,
sorry I got sidetracked with spreadsheets. What were we supposed to be talking about?
The outfit.
Oh, like, yeah.
Are you in-house, out-house? Like, what? How does this
I'm in the out-house.
Happen? Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
It's a wide range. The museum field includes museums with 3 staff people or less. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the big institutions that you wonder, where does this money come from? How can they have so many people? And some places do it in-house. I think there are a lot of war stories out there, one right in Detroit of trying to actually build a side enterprise and building exhibits that ends up being like trying to run 2 businesses at once. And the argument is a strong one worth making that you should focus on what you do. And in the museum world, that is serving the visitors with your mission. And building exhibits and trying to run a workshop and market things is not necessarily a part of that. Sure. So very often an institution will look to somebody like us or a company like us to help design and build. And also, these are projects that come up, you know, when the funding comes up once every 5-8 years. It's not something you can necessarily perpetuate in-house in the museum. And we bring all kinds of expertise to projects that you wouldn't expect to find on a museum staff. And that runs the gamut from building things out of wood and plastic and metal and interpretation, how you take a subject and actually make it relatable to the general public, which is a lot of what I do. Yeah. I haven't even said that out loud yet, but that's...
Well, that's kind of a good segue, because I meant to ask too, you know, for people who might not know what, you know, exhibit design is, you know, imagine somebody who's hearing that term for the first time. And to me, like, immediately I'm thinking of, you know, that experience of going into an environment and sort of feeling that environmental storytelling happening around you. But in your own words, like, what is exhibit design?
I love that question, because my father, who's a lifelong designer, said exhibit design in museums. Oh, I guess somebody does have to do that. Dad, you've been to museums, but of course it was a surprise to him that there's somebody who makes those things.
Right.
I would be surprised if a lot of people feel that way. A lot of, you know, we're very behind the scenes. We don't sign our work. You don't see Flutter and Wow written on the lead wall when you go into an exhibition. Let's see. Again, this runs a wide gamut, because we have projects from the Ossian Sweet Memorial that we're doing in downtown Detroit, which is the interpretation of a historic story of a black doctor who moved to Detroit in the 1920s, married, had a child, was successful at practicing medicine. Found a really nice house on the east side in a mostly white neighborhood. But on the second night he and his family lived there, the house was surrounded by hundreds, if not thousands, of angry white people threatening to destroy him if he didn't move out. It's a much longer, very gnarly story, very interesting, touching on a lot of topics. We're helping the city create this memorial park. A lot of it is how we tell the story in as few words as possible, because people don't want to go to a park and read a book unless it's the book they brought with them. But also how we can make that story relevant to as many people as possible today and make it accessible and understandable to as many people. You know, and that accessibility is like a big all caps word for us, because it's not just, motor skills. It's your own background means that you come to an exhibit with different kinds of biases. Mm-hmm. And how can we give everybody a kind of access ramp to the stories that are being told? Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of thing. And then, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, we're working with a children's museum in Albion, kids and stuff, wonderful place, to make a music room.
Oh, cool.
With, yeah, I know. Music is in me every moment.
Love
and
music, yes.
Getting to do this project is so crazily fulfilling, but very different from Hosh and Sweet. I probably don't have to go into it. We're talking about little kids,
right.
Like first grade is old kids. Who will be going into this room and banging on instruments. And
wait, I want to do this. This
can adults do this too?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh.
You know, but adults tend to stand off in the corner scrolling on their phones.
Uh-huh, and, uh-huh.
Come on, live in the moment,
yeah,
for a little. But hopefully, yeah. I mean, I will definitely be in there playing around. The idea is to try and figure out how to teach at least a little bit. I always say it's subversion, where it's trying to subvert things and get a little lesson in there.
Mm-hmm.
Lesson you didn't even realize you were learning,
yeah,
while you're banging on a,
yeah,
broken drum head. And also, hopefully, this is the big challenge that we may or may not succeed in, is how we can make this room really make music, mm-hmm, in one form or another. And I'm a big fan of what many people would consider noise. So my range of what classifies as music is very wide. But,
nice.
But it, you know, we're talking about, like, can we have a blinking light or some kind of click track? So there's kind of a rhythm set,
right,
and see if we can get a little bit of harmony,
yeah,
going on in the room.
Get some vibes.
So it's not just kids banging on things and chaos,
right,
which, you know, that's, there's a lot of value in that too. So
yeah, sometimes you just got to make some noise.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm going to go back on what I said. We're totally going to succeed in that challenge because there's no, it's all success. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a kid banging on a thing, that's going to be thumbs up.
Well, you talked about accessibility,
right,
with a capital A. I mean, your job is so layered. It's,
yeah,
so textured. It's like the environment overall.
Right.
It's not just like what you're hearing, mm-hmm, and seeing, but it's like touching and smelling,
emotion,
I imagine. Like, do you ever do olfactory,
ooh,
experiential things?
Cool.
Like,
yeah,
there's, it's
yeah,
a big, tall order.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. And you're talking about different senses. We use the word multimodality, which is kind of academic sounding, but it's part of what makes exhibits different from learning through a book or watching a movie, a documentary, is that. And we do that, we very consciously, when we're designing exhibits, try and think about how that on-ramp, for lack of a better word, suits different vehicles, right? If you're the kind of person who likes pounding on buttons, there are some buttons for you to pound on. If you're the kind of person who likes to read a paragraph, there are some paragraphs,
gotcha,
to read, like
a
all of those.
For,
yeah, a little something for everyone.
Well, I love hearing you describe, you know, these two kind of experiences that you've been crafting, because it ties back kind of perfectly to when you were talking about your backstory. And, like, you know, as a kid, you're writing, you're listening to music, you're doing all of this sort of storytelling, and now you're in the perfect position to tell all of these different stories through basically every medium that you can think of, as long as it's correct for the job. So it's almost like you're a storyteller, right?
I think so. Really lucky. God, it's so nice to hear all that stuff and remember how damn lucky I am. It's very fulfilling. Not to say, okay, right, this is where I have to give the disclaimer.
Yeah.
Not that there isn't a grind.
Sure.
Not that I don't get up in the morning, and many mornings I actually have to consciously think to myself, what do I least want to do today that is on my to-do list?
Mm-hmm.
If I want to survive, I better do the thing that I least want to do and get it out of the way. And God, sometimes that thing, like, takes twice as long as you expect. It's and of course, working with people, I sung the praises of how amazing it is to have a great team. Also, human beings are impossible, you know, so not every day is roses raining,
sure,
from the sky. Maybe it is, you know, maybe it is, but it's a question of whether or not you can see the roses, right?
Yeah.
I kind of, that's kind of part of my personal belief. The roses are always falling. It's just a question of whether you're open to it.
Mm-hmm.
But But managing people and, you know, clients have their own anxieties, and mm-hmm. sometimes they're founded in something realistic. Sometimes, from my perspective, it's just anxiety expressing itself for no other reason than anxiety likes to express itself. Yeah. So that's the hard part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can't downplay it. It's sure. not like I.
It's always going to be there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Managing people. That's not even right. The right word. It's managing yourself amongst people. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of thinking about people's motivations, you know, and I don't mean that to sound like maniacal, but like, who's my boss's boss? Because my boss the client is sweating like how their performance is right now,
that's
right?
Smart.
And even though they're talking to me about, you know, this plant and how we're going to talk about this plant in this exhibit, ultimately at the end of the day, they're hoping their boss is happy mm-hmm. with their work. And so I think about that a little bit, like, how can I help this client look good to their mm-hmm. boss?
That's mm-hmm. a really good point.
So now I have to ask you, if somebody was walking by Flutter and Wow and your door happened to be open and they had the guts to knock on the door, what kind of skills, software, hardware, tools would they have to know how to use to woo you and get a job on the spot?
Well, I'm going to answer that with curiosity is number one. I try and look for signs of self-discipline because, again, getting back to maybe I am the leader of a team, but I'm only effective because I happen to have a team who gets up in the morning and is ready to go to work. Like, I don't hire people who you have to say, come on, get to work every day. Luckily, we do, you know, it's fun, interesting work.
Yeah.
So hopefully. But aside from that, there are a lot of skills involved. If you're a designer, it's not just curiosity. It's also an attention to detail. Oh my gosh, sure. I'm scoping out every detail everywhere I go. And we have to have, we're doing work for museums. So the work has to be
dialed
really top notch.
And
if you're the kind of person who's like, good enough. Ooh, that no phrase makes me cringe. Like, good enough.
Good enough.
I mean, there's always a point at which, we're not getting paid anymore for this. This kind of has to be good enough. But I hate getting to that point.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's really, a lot of it's personality.
Okay. So these are all soft skills.
Yeah.
They weren't
totally
like,
soft skills.
Because the other stuff, you could watch a YouTube video, I presume?
Yes, you can learn.
So the character and personality.
Like a lot of it. Software has gotten to a point. I mean, it's different 20 years ago, but software now is, you look things up online, you figure out how to use the software. We're all trying to figure out how to use software. I was just watching the video on Google's been pushing Gemini AI.
Oh, yeah, right.
I'm like, stop, let me just get some work done.
Right.
I finally felt compelled. I had to watch a video on that. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, trying to figure out if that AI will assist us, which incidentally, for those wondering, I haven't found a big application for us with AI.
You still need humans?
Oh, absolutely. I can't even imagine doing the job any other way.
Yeah.
But you know, AI is kind of overblown. It's a really hyped search engine, really, in many ways.
Right.
We don't need to get into it, but there's applications where a really rigorous search engine comes in really handy. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I'm looking
at.
That's
pretty much how I use it.
Yeah.
Like, please help me to write a script.
Right.
And then it scours Reddit.
Right. And it finds all these scripts and it mashes them together.
Exactly,
rather than giving
you
a list of scripts it finds, it mashes them together, which has its value in an application here
and
there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yes, a lot of soft skills. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be a part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
I want to make sure you fit on the team. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, definitely not to downplay, having skills is important. And if I'm hiring you for the workshop, you'd better have a little experience pushing things through a table saw. But also, there's learning every day. I'm learning every day. I expect everyone else to learn every day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to quit. Let's not quit learning.
Absolutely. Yeah. Life is a learning journey.
Oh my gosh.
The ever learner.
Yes, the ever learner.
Yeah.
I'm not sure young people understand just how much that is true. Like literally every day, I feel like a newbie in this world.
Well, it's because they have the encyclopedia in their pocket. Right. And it's so easy to get the answer to everything.
Google it.
So, yeah. Please retain some of this information for later use.
Yes. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Jason. This has been riveting.
Yes.
And I cannot wait to learn more about what you do. I wish we should probably do this again.
We should just do this again. We're just going to have to bring it back, or we're just going to have to get a coffee.
Okay.
I mean, yes. No, I love this. And
there's always more.
Yeah.
There's always more.
There's always more. Well, and it's really heartening to be around people who, you know, see every day as an opportunity for something beautiful, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you put it so well. Absolutely. Absolutely. Go to a museum, folks. There's a lot of cool stuff happening out there. History museums especially. We didn't talk about that, but the hot spot in the museum world is the history museums.
Okay.
Not, I mean, all you other museum folks, don't worry, you're doing good work. but you know, I go to a lot of conferences, and the history conferences are the ones where we're just in an age right now where there's a lot of waking up to history. There's a lot of revision is usually used in the negative way, but we're revising the old white narrative, which is so corrupt, so dishonest about the history of this country and the history of the world. Mm. And we're just happen to be at a moment where it's acceptable to challenge that old white narrative. Mm. And there's a lot of exciting stuff happening. A lot of folks in history museums who are trying something new and pushing envelopes.
Wow. I think that was really important that
was
you
perfect.
Said that.
Yeah. You hit the perfect note too. That's one of the notes of like, are there conferences that you know, people could kind of explore and things, especially, you know, in the realm of exhibit design and museums. So that's
Oh, you go to the History Museum Conference and you're surrounded by historians who are like, oh, did you know, they've got a story for everything.
Of course.
It's a crazy, cool group to be amongst.
That sounds awesome. Okay. I could totally geek out on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll just have Jason back at some point. But in the meantime, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. A lot of fun.
If you like this podcast, be sure to heart, like, and subscribe to Cadence wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at CadencePod, or check out our episodes and more at thecadencepod.com. While we are proudly based in Ypsilanti, Michigan, we are recording out of Fifth Avenue Studios in Ann Arbor at Ann Arbor District Library. And we hope wherever you're creating from in the world, you are marching to your own cadence. Thanks for listening.